morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 16, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A high court in Pretoria reverses former President Jacob Zuma's parole.
You cannot arrest a person today, tomorrow you release him, and then you bring him back for all these years. The judiciary must start reviewing everything that has been happening before they put the country into a big, big, big problem.
South Africa may eventually renew permits for over 2,000 Zimbabwean migrants. The number of Malians facing hunger has tripled in just a year. A call for African governments to invest more in health care. And Kenyan authorities discovered 3 cases of the Omicron variant.
We have been sequencing some of the samples that we have collected, and I can confirm that we have actually detected the Omicron variant among some of the travelers who have been traveling through Kenya.
And self-censorship by Chinese educational and cultural program worries African educators. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. High Court in Pretoria has declared unlawful the Correctional Services decision to release former President Jacob Zuma under parole. It has ordered that he be taken back to prison to serve the remaining time of his 15-month sentence for contempt of court. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Handing down its judgment in Pretoria today, the court found that the decision by the Commissioner of Prisons, Arthur Fraser, to place Jacob Zuma on medical parole made on the 5th of September was unlawful. It rejected the former president's medical parole application. It ordered that Zuma be returned to the custody of the Correctional Services to serve the remainder of his sentence. The court also declared that the time Zuma spent on medical parole should not be counted as part of his sentence. The judgment also found that in jailing Zuma, the Constitutional Court had put 15 months as a minimum sentence and thus rejecting lesser forms of punishment. It also criticized the Commissioner of Prisons for overturning the parole body's decision not to grant Zuma parole. Many in South Africa, like Gretman Kwebu, are disappointed by the judgment.
You cannot arrest a person today, tomorrow you release him, and then you bring him back for all these years. Yet you are also a human being. You need to rest and sort out your things in life. The judiciary must start reviewing everything that has been happening before they put the country into a big, big, big problem. Because once if they arrest him now, the country will go back to what has been happening before when we saw people looting things.
The 79-year-old Zuma was found in contempt of court for failing to cooperate with the judicial inquiry into alleged corruption during his time in office. He turned himself into police in July and was released on parole in September. Legal expert Vusumuzi Sibanda told VOA that the decision means Zuma should go back to prison, but he still has options.
Obviously, he can appeal the decision, which if it is appealed, then he may not go to prison, you know, because of the fact that it's on appeal. Either decide that he wants to get bail, or by mere noting of an appeal, he will not be sent straight to jail in the meantime.
Zuma has indicated his intention to appeal the judgment. A statement released by the Jacob Zuma Foundation shows that he has launched an appeal describing the court decision as wrong. The Department of Correctional Services says it is still studying the judgment before taking a decision on implementing the court directive. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This week, South African news reports say a notice from the country's Department of Home Affairs suggests that authorities have reversed an earlier decision not to renew the permits of nearly 200,000 Zimbabwean migrants beyond the end of the year. Ade Gondo looks at the new directive.
A notice posted on the website of the Home Affairs Department indicates that an earlier immigration directive has been withdrawn. And it said that the contents of the ruling have to be brought to the attention of all concerned officials and all Zimbabwean migrants who are applying for permits to remain in the country. In late November, the South African cabinet decided not to renew the stay of 200,000 permit holders. Many South African nationals welcomed the move, which left a bleak future for many economic migrants from neighboring Zimbabwe. Those nationals where the Zimbabwe Exemption Permits, or ZEPs, were given a 12-month grace period to regularize their status and obtain mainstream visas. VOA reached out to organizations representing Zimbabweans working in South Africa for their response to the recent development. Mabuto Mabena is the chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa. Mabena says it is his organization's understanding the latest rule, Immigration Directive No. 11 of 2021, merely reverses contentious aspects of the previous one from November.
The rather holders of ZEP who qualify to move to other visas will then move to other visas during the 12-month grace period as provided for in the cabinet decision. What was problematic with the Immigration Directive 10 of 2021 as issued on the 29th of November 2021 is that it created problems because there was a sentence which said holders of ZEP should provide the receipts to their banks or to their employers as proof that they've submitted their application.
Butonyati is with the Migrant Workers of South Africa Association, which has contacted the government to get clarification on the recent notice.
What we have heard from the Minister of Home Affairs is that they've actually withdrawn the circular. They have not reversed the decision on non-renewal of the Zimbabwe exemption permits. So what the minister said is that the circular was causing confusion, so he instructed his officials to actually withdraw the circular. So that's the position.
Nyati says that his organization still needs to establish what will happen with the suspension of some migrants' bank accounts.
I think it was going to be prudent if the Home Affairs Department actually indicated that during the grace period, the holders of ZTP permits should actually have their accounts uninterrupted. But it was going to be good if they had put it, in a directive.
Sociopolitical analyst F. Nguwe says the developments are a symptom of a Zimbabwean problem rather than a South African one.
But also a challenge to the ZANU-PF-led government to remember that there are thousands and thousands and millions of Zimbabweans outside country who fled misgovernance. And it is not the responsibility of the South African government or the UK or the US to fix what they fled from.
Observers such as Nguwe maintain that the solution to the plight of migrants lies with addressing the reasons why so many Zimbabweans leave their country. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Kenya has detected its first case of the COVID-19 Omicron variant. Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe says three passengers from South Africa have since been quarantined. As Atieno Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, this comes days after the Ministry of Health said Kenya has been experiencing a surge in COVID-19 cases.
Kenya is now among 78 countries in the world that have detected the contagious Omicron variant. Speaking in Mombasa on Wednesday during a consultative meeting with the Council of Governors, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said the three cases were detected at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in Nairobi among travelers, one South African and two Kenyans. Kagwe added that the three have already been quarantined and the process of sequencing more samples is ongoing to confirm the level of infection in Kenya.
We have been sequencing some of the samples that we have collected, and I can confirm that we have actually detected the Omicron variant among some of the travelers who have been traveling through Kenya. And we have at least three cases so far. We have a lot of other samples that we are sequencing. So in the next 2 days, I will be able to confirm the spread or otherwise of the Omicron variant in the country.
According to the World Health Organization, the Omicron variant is a fast spreader. However, so far it does not lead to severe diseases like its predecessor, the Delta variant. World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, says that inasmuch as hospitalization has increased due to the Omicron variant, intensive care unit bed occupancy rate is still low.
Africa is now officially in the fourth wave of the pandemic, which is partly due to the Omicron variant. There's been an 83% surge in new cases on the continent this week compared to the previous week. This is the fastest surge recorded since May last year. Evidence from South Africa is that while hospitalizations have increased by almost 70% in the past 7 days, intensive care unit bed occupancy rates remain low at 7.5%.
Meanwhile, Kagwe has urged all Kenyan counties to begin serious preparations for any eventualities. Council of Governors Chairperson Martin Wambora says all counties are ready and prepared to deal with the crisis.
We are aware of this problem, of this new variant, and we, the county governors over the 47 counties, we are ready to work closely with the Minister of Health, and we are insisting on the protocols which they have already given out, which our people will have to follow. We are confirming that our oxygen plants are functional and the ICU beds are ready. Preparedness is always the best way to deal with these kind of surprises.
The Ministry of Health said it is consulting with experts from South Africa and other countries where the Omicron variant is prevalent to find out how to effectively deal with it. The ministry has also ruled out any lockdowns or curfews anytime soon as a measure to curb the spread. Instead, it is urging Kenyans to get vaccinated. So far, about 12% of the Kenyan population has been inoculated. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 16. African leaders have called on governments across the continent to invest more in healthcare to fight the coronavirus and future pandemics. The appeal came as the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the African Union this week held the first conference on public health in Africa. Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Addressing the virtual meeting of African health workers and experts, Rwandan President Paul Kagame said governments could no longer ignore public health investment as the continent grapples with the COVID-19 pandemic.
There needs to be a renewed commitment by governments and the national parliaments to increase domestic financing for health in Africa. This has been a priority of the African Union for several years, but progress has not been fast enough. We cannot continue to rely on external funding for something so important to our future.
20 years ago in Abuja, Nigeria, African governments agreed to allocate 15% of their budget to healthcare. Only two countries, Rwanda and South Africa, met the target. Africa has seen economic growth in the past few years, but spending by governments on health has rarely increased. Health experts blame the lack of healthcare spending on low GDP growth, tax collections, and competing priorities. An Afrobarometer survey showed 46% of African citizens across 36 countries oppose paying more taxes to be used to improve healthcare. Across Africa, most health facilities are concentrated in urban areas, effectively cutting off millions from accessing advanced medical assistance. John Nkengasong, the head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said the continent needs a new approach to raise health investment.
You've all heard from our various leaders, political leadership, the call for a new public health order that hinges on four things. Actually, strengthening our public health institution, workforce, expanding manufacturing on both vaccines, diagnostics and therapeutics, respectful action-oriented partnership, which is all underpinned by the need to invest ourselves in supporting this. Domestic financing is so important so that we can achieve these four goals.
African Union Commission Chairman Moussa Faki Mohamed pledged to support the development of healthcare systems that can deal with future challenges.
I would like to assure you today that African Union Commission stands firm in our resolve to bolster manufacturing capacity for vaccines, diagnostic and therapeutics, to build resilient health systems capable of detecting future health threats, and to build financing mechanisms that allow member states to respond efficiently and effectively to the health needs of the continent.
According to the Brookings Institute, Africa needs funding models that encourage domestic resource mobilization and prioritization of health. For example, in 2019, Nigeria signed a $75 million financing agreement with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to strengthen the country's primary health care provision fund. Africa's virtual conference on public health ends Thursday. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The number of Malians facing hunger has tripled in just a year, say a group of 22 humanitarian organizations working in the West African country. Mali Country Director of Norwegian Refugee Council, Elena Vicaro, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the food crisis facing 1.2 million people in Mali.
Food crisis right now is quite alarming because the number of Malians faces hunger as increased nearly threefold in just 1 year. So we reach a record number of 1.2 million people into a food crisis in 2021, and is really one of the highest recorded level of hunger that we could see since the beginning of the crisis in Mali in 2012.
What are some of the contributing factors to this crisis? Why has it gotten so bad?
Well, it's a combination of factors. There is, on one hand, the drought. It's also a matter of insecurity and rising a level, actually, of insecurity. And there is also an impact of COVID. So, for instance, as I said, the drought was hit the country very hard this year, leading the loss of more than 225,000 hectares of fields and affecting more than 3 million people, especially in the region of Mopti, Ségou, and Timbuktu. To the figures projected from the Cadre Monise are talking about a further 58% increase in the number of food insecure people for the next lean season, which is between June and August.
How does violence as well make it harder for these communities to meet their needs, their food needs?
Yeah, the insecurity has forced about 400,000 people to flee their homes up to September. So basically, many families, they have to abandon their fields, and sometimes they've seen their livestock stolen. There is also an increasing grip of armed factors on people's ability to move freely. So we saw some villages, for instance, that are like fully besieged. So families, vulnerable families, cannot access aid, cannot access their field or grazing area for their livestock and markets surrounding their villages. So we see families who, you know, they had really to abandon all their belongings and had to walk maybe 20 kilometers without food and water to and escape through the bush during the night to enable to be able to survive.
That was Elena Vicaro, Mali Country Director for Norwegian Refugee Council. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bamako. Nigeria has been recording massive growth in its information technology sector, but only one-fifth of IT workers are women. Aid groups are trying to help women and girls enter the IT world by teaching them about blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
60-year-old Elizabeth Onaji arrives for a weekly cryptocurrency training for women in Nigeria's capital city, Abuja. Since enrolling for the training in June, she says her knowledge about blockchain technology has improved greatly and that she is propagating the message to other women.
I believe that this is a worldwide project or business. Nigeria should not be the odd one out. We should also key into the global trend.
A Nigerian crypto educator Janet Cartio runs for blockchain classes. She began free blockchain education for women in 2017 and says hundreds of Nigerian women have benefited from the training so far.
I'm always interested in teaching women so that they can also be part of what is happening in the technology space. You understand? And then you come to see a lot of women, mothers, are interested, are already taking this blockchain technology and making life out of it. Some are housewife, some are even working.
But Nigeria's technology sector, like many other sectors, has a poor female representation. The country's Statistics Bureau says less than a fifth of IT workers are women, despite major growth in the industry in the last decade. People like Katio are trying to address this problem with blockchain education for women. Nigeria is Africa's biggest blockchain market. During a recent class, she partnered with the non-profit T'Challa Foundation to teach women about an African cryptocurrency called T'Challa, which was introduced in November. Messiah Obuago is a co-founder of the T'Challa Foundation, the non-profit that introduced the cryptocurrency.
T'Challa is a hero that is coming up from Africa and to save Africa. And what we're trying to say is that it's time for Africa to have a voice in the blockchain space, and also Africa to have a voice when it comes to cryptocurrency.
However, Obuagu says government policies could prove a challenge to the advancement of blockchain technology in Nigeria.
When you speak to people about cryptocurrency, they will try to remind you the government said it's not good for us. You know, it's a big barrier, and people tend to follow that.
In February this year, Nigerian authorities warned citizens against cryptocurrencies, saying they were unstable and insecure and often led to the loss of investments. Authorities in October launched a digital currency known as the e-Naira. But despite the risks and odds, women like Katio and Elizabeth say they will be promoting cryptocurrency training for more women to get involved. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Chinese government is promoting Chinese language and culture through Confucius Institute programs worldwide, including in Africa. Some educators say they are concerned about what they say is censorship in Chinese-funded programs. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
Steve Wakoli has been working for 3 years to perfect his skills in Kung Fu, a popular martial art taught at the Kenyatta University Confucius Institute. He's also a teacher at the institute, where hundreds of students are learning about Chinese culture and language at the facility named after the ancient Chinese philosopher whose teachings are a cornerstone of life in East Asia. There are about 525 Chinese-funded Confucius Institutes worldwide, including 54 in Africa, according to a 2019 U.S. Senate report by the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Jacob Ratemo is one of more than 500 students enrolled here. He says learning about Chinese language and culture will help him find better work, but Ratemo acknowledges the classes avoid subjects that are politically sensitive in China.
But the advantage is, I think, especially when you're in university level, you can access such matters. You know, I can go to VOA News and on a regular basis and see what is going on in China, or I can go to Google and get that information. So, yes, I can admit there are a few challenges when you ask those questions to the Chinese themselves.
According to the Senate report, Confucius Institute funding comes with strings that can compromise academic freedom. For example, the Chinese teacher signed contracts with Beijing, pledging not to damage China's national interests. Confucius Institute management turned down VOA's request for comment. Teacher Wakoli says the institute's syllabus does not allow much time for politically sensitive topics and debate. But analysts say the Confucius Institute suppressed discussions on topics like Taiwan and Hong Kong to protect their funding from the Chinese government. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a very good day.